There are thousands of coal and metal mines, both active and inactive, scattered throughout northwestern North America. A study published earlier this month in the journal Science Advances found a consistent pattern of harm to salmon habitat and watersheds from some of those mines.
It's basically a smoking gun.
Guy Archibald is the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission, a coalition of 15 tribal governments advocating for protections for watersheds shared by Alaska and British Columbia and Canada, as well as tribal representation in the decision-making process for BC mines. He says the study is groundbreaking.
We have observed for decades that mines and watersheds occur and then salmon populations are harmed. But there's never been a direct connection made between the mining activities and the harm to salmon. And this paper goes a long ways to showing that.
Jonathan Moore is a co-author of this study and a salmon ecosystem scientist and professor at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, British Columbia.
I think that's one of the things that's really unique about this paper is it does bring together the sort of state-of-the-art science about how these really complicated and changing river systems work with sort of state-of-the-art sort of mining understanding and how it's regulated.
Moore says the paper isn't arguing against mining.
What it is it's arguing for the incorporation of best available science to guide mining so it can be most sustainable.
The study's lead author, Chris Sargent, is a research scientist with the University of Montana's Flathead Lake Biological Station. He says the interplay of mining effects on salmon watersheds is compelling in part because it's so complex.
You need engineers, biologists, hydrologists, governance and policy people. They all play a role in the mining world and how mines could potentially impact salmon. And in such an important place, like Northwest North America, including Southeast Alaska, I mean, they're some of like the last best places for fish in the world.
Sargent says there's no one-stop shop for mining data, so they had to pull from a variety of sources, U.S. Geological Survey databases, data from mining industry resources, government agencies, and academic literature. In that data, study authors found numerous examples of mines having negative impacts on watersheds, even long after they were closed.
For instance, we point out a river in the Coeur d'Alene watershed in Idaho, where even 70 years after mining had ended, the pollution that maintained because of that work continues to depress the populations of fish and aquatic insects in that stretch of river.
It can be a similar story hundreds of miles away from mines and across international borders.
In the Elk Valley watershed in southern BC that flows in the Kootenai River and through Montana and Idaho and back into BC, there's selenium pollution from coal mines that's 250 kilometers downstream. And that wasn't really envisioned before those mines were built.
The U.S. government is taking note. Last month, the Biden administration called on the Canadian government to participate in a joint investigation of that selenium pollution in the transboundary Elk Valley watershed. In 2020, Congress committed millions of dollars to transboundary watershed monitoring projects. Whether or not mines or watersheds straddle borders, Sargent also notes mines are being proposed and built in more and more extreme environments, on mountains, across glaciers, as easy-to-reach areas are already tapped.
So you've got these feats of engineering to build mines in places where there are no roads or many humans at all. And then on top of that, you've got climate change coming down the pike where we're getting more intense rain events, more landslides, more flooding, more drought.
And once-in-a-lifetime climate events are happening more and more frequently, says another co-author, Nikki Skuse. She's the director of the Northern Confluence Initiative in Smithers, BC, and serves in a consortium of academics and community organizers pushing for changes to mining law in the province.
We were hit with a heat dome, atmospheric rivers, catastrophic flooding, all within kind of a six-month time frame last year. And so there really needs to be a step up in the environmental assessment process for projects, as well as for existing infrastructure like these tailings dams to look at these climate risks.
Sargent says a prime example of unforeseen climate impacts is the Red Dog Mine in Western Alaska, which was built in 1989.
Because of unforeseen permafrost thaw, their water treatment facilities and their open pits are getting overwhelmed with more water than was ever envisioned. And that's within a few decades of the project starting. So those are the kind of concerns I see. Is like, can we, if we're building these bigger and bigger mine projects, can we even do the engineering correctly.
He points out that mines are critical for the transition to a low-carbon future. Copper and other minerals are essential parts of batteries for electric cars and other low-carbon alternatives.
The decision to build a large mine is going to impact the land for decades to centuries, and that decision needs to be thought about really carefully.
Moore says that the two-year process of putting together the study also exposed what he calls some really massive black holes in our understanding of the extent and impact of mining.
You know, mining companies and other industries, at least in Canada, don't necessarily need to share their data. And so it's proprietary. And so the information that underpins their environmental assessments, underpins their monitoring, not all of it sees the light of day. And I think that's a real key challenge in terms of trying to, again, assess the true risks of these projects.
For study authors, the data point to a need for better transparency, more consideration of the cumulative effects of mines, and the complex environmental stressors that could impact mines and watersheds due to the changing climate. From her side of the border, Skuse says she and the BC Mining Law Reform are pushing to improve Canadian tailings dam safety standards and water management, in part by closing loopholes in the environmental assessment process that allows mining permits to be amended. On the U.S. side, for Archibald and the Tribal Coalition, the study is clear evidence that the BC government should take into account a much wider swath of possible impacts when permitting mines.
Well, if they don't talk to the downstream communities, if they don't learn how these communities utilize the resource and depend on the resource, then basically they're making a decision without any information. And that's no way to manage a mine and a habitat.
Mining Association of BC, a mining industry group, did not respond to a request for comment. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.